Welcome, everybody. I'm Andy Zoden. You're listening to KickServeRadio.com, Tennis on Air with Andy Zoden, and Mile High Sports Radio. This segment is brought to you by USTA Colorado. Go to ColoradoTennis.com for all of your competitive and recreational tennis needs. That's ColoradoTennis.com. We're going in the tennis zone with the great Steve Flink. He is author of The Greatest Tennis Matches of All Time. And Steve, we're on the eve of Wimbledon. Lots going on. Big news coming out of England. Certainly the election. England deciding to secede, if you will, from the European Union the same weekend that we're about to start the 2016 Wimbledon. If you're a player or part of a player's camp going over to London at this time of year, do you suspect that there are more concerns than just to play tennis?
I think there clearly will be, and I'm sure that the brass at Wimbledon is going to have to sit the players down and reassure them, because I'm sure this has sent shockwaves throughout the tennis community the same way it has the world at large. So, but I do think that reassurance will come from the standard procedures they have in place. I don't think they're going to be terribly worried. I just think they're going to be a little confused and uneasy.
Steve, you went over to France. You witnessed the French Open this year. I stayed stateside, and from where I was watching, obviously the weather was one factor. It seemed like the crowds were relatively small. It seemed to me like with the pre-tournament withdrawal of Roger Federer, the early part of the tournament withdrawal of Rafa Nadal, that this tournament lost a lot of luster, Serena Williams losing in the tournament. Is it safe to say that there was just a little less glamour surrounding this year's French Open, and perhaps that could potentially carry over into Wimbledon?
I think there's a lot of truth to that, Andy. I would say, though, that at least Serena was there for the final. It was an unexpected defeat against Muguruza in the final, but she managed to sort of muddle her way through into the final. And then, of course, we had the quest of Djokovic to complete the career Grand Slam, mission accomplished. And I think that was the overriding drama of the tournament. He saved the tournament with his ability to finally come through and complete his career Grand Slam. And had that not been the case, they would have suffered much more. It was very strange not to have Federer there at all. And yes, Nadal's shocking withdrawal before his third round match, where he explained about his wrist injury. So no doubt that diminished the event, the absence of Federer and the early departure of Nadal. But Djokovic in the end, I think, was the saving force. And then Serena being in the finals was helpful. But you touched on an important thing too. The weather was so abysmal throughout the fortnight, and then the whole second week when I was there, the skies were so gray and dark throughout that I think it dampened the spirits somewhat of the players and certainly of the fans. And you alluded to some of the sparse crowds, and I can understand why, because dark gray skies and cold, low 50s, and it felt as if it was 40 degrees. So it was not typical celebratory Paris weather.
Novak Djokovic, the calendar slam certainly still intact for 2016. Right now, he carries the title of all four slams at the same time for the first time since Rod Laver. That being said, Steve, I know you like Novak Djokovic. So do I. We both have a lot of respect for him as a player, but he seems to lack something from a rock star quality that Roger Federer has had for all of these years. Do you think that he carries the torch of the number one player in the world in the same way that Roger Federer has for all these years? Or do you think that it's somewhat of a step down for the game to have Novak Djokovic be the number one player in the world?
No, I think that would be an unfair assessment, Andy. He just carries himself very differently. If you look at Federer, Nadal, and Djokovic, Roger had this sort of regal quality about him, an elegance on the court, understated manner, exemplary in many ways, although not a good loser. I will say that. That's a separate discussion. But yes, he carried himself publicly with a certain air that maybe nobody could match. And then Nadal came along with his high intensity and integrity, and I think the crowds really responded to that. And Djokovic's problem was a carryover from his younger days when he was known as brash and sometimes impetuous, and I think some of this criticism was unfair. The way he's handling himself now, Andy, I think is remarkable. And I think he connects with crowds in a different way. And you notice the bows he was taking with the ball boys after his matches at the French. It's a sort of a Guga Kuerten flavor that he's got. And then if you listen to his press conferences afterwards, by the way, they are also exemplary. I mean, he was so thoughtful and pensive and probing after he won this title, looking back on the disappointment of a year ago, losing to Stan Wawrinka, explaining the whole, but I honestly think that he deserves much more credit for the way he wears the robe of number one than many of my colleagues are giving him.
And I agree with you, and I continue to probe on this issue, Steve, because I'm trying to figure out what it is that people a little further removed from the sport, I guess, have a problem with. I heard him described on one radio show that I was on as a slightly more likable version of Lendl. Do you think that there's something maybe stylistically about his game? I agree with you. Off the court, he really doesn't have a misstep. I have never seen him lose his composure in a press conference when he's giving acceptance speeches. He couldn't be more respectful of his opponents and their camps and everybody involved in the tournament. So I agree with you. There's nary a misstep as far as what he says and how he carries himself on the court. Do you think there's something sort of robotic almost about his game that he really does come across as sort of with like a machine-like quality that people maybe don't gravitate toward the same way they did Roger and Rafa?
I guess you could make that case. I think there is a case. On the other hand, I think fans do marvel at the athleticism and the Gumby quality of it. What he can do when stretched out far, I mean, things that he does when he's wide on his backhand side compared to, say, Andy Murray are absolutely astonishing. He can, the shift from defense to offense, this just the raw athleticism. But I think Andy, it's just taken too much for granted now because he's dominating the game. And I think it also depends on the matchup. I don't think most fans, I happen to like it, but most fans I don't think are enamored of his rivalry with Andy Murray because there's too much, there's a sameness there. There's too much similarity. If we saw him play Federer more, I think his matches with Federer are the most entertaining, by the way. That's where I think we see Djokovic in his best light because there's such a contrast. And I think we see his greatest qualities come through when he plays Federer, to a lesser extent when he plays Nadal. But when he's playing Murray, and they might meet for a third straight Grand Slam final at Wimbledon if the seedings hold up, that one doesn't work as well for the fans.
And maybe you make a great point. In fact, not maybe, you do make a great point there, because when you think about some of the most watchable tennis matches that you and I have ever seen, going back to, I think, Borg and McEnroe is a tremendous contrast in styles, which played out well on the grass at Wimbledon. I even remember seeing some beautifully played semifinals between Patrick Rafter and Andre Agassi that were certainly a lot of fun to watch. We see, you know, Rafa and Roger, you know, play very, very differently, and it seems like they play off of each other so well. And maybe that's the sport, is what the sport is missing, is a rivalry that really features contrasting styles, and that's what is less appealing from an optical standpoint. Is that fair to say?
That's very fair, and it's a good assessment. And I think, you know, obviously let's throw Sampras and Agassi in there, and that one was a very rich contrast in styles too, with Sampras with the serve and volley and the elegant speed athleticism, and Agassi with his remarkable command from the backcourt and his great returner serve. So the greatest server versus the greatest returner. That was always riveting to watch, I think. And that's what Djokovic needs, is that kind of a foil. Unfortunately, too many of the other guys play in a similar fashion to him. And that's the nature of the game today, as you know, Andy. So Federer is the one person who changes that equation. And so I think those finals, for instance, the U.S. Open final, I thought neither Djokovic nor Federer was at their very best that afternoon, but it was so compelling. And stylistically, they're so different. And then I think the fans develop a different appreciation of Djokovic. Even if they weren't rooting for him, they appreciate his skills more when he has to play somebody like Roger, who's attacking and who has such diversity in his game.
And you talk about the rivalry, and you threw it in yourself, the Sampras-Agassi, a contrast in styles, and certainly Pete and Andre provided American tennis fans with a tremendous reason to watch these tournaments until the very end and through the middle, and whenever they knew that either one of those guys was playing, it was worth turning on the television for. Going into this year's Wimbledon, what do American tennis fans have to look forward to most, in your opinion? Got some young guns coming up, but are they ready to make a dent in this draw, perhaps make it into the second week?
Well, that's the question. I mean, obviously John Isner conceivably could. Interestingly enough, we've got Taylor Dent is going to come up against Stan Wawrinka in the first round.
I believe you mean Taylor Fritz there. I'm sure Taylor Dent would appreciate that.
You just mentioned Taylor Dent to me before we went on the air. Taylor Fritz, the young Californian, who of course plays, actually, who may end up playing quite a bit like Taylor Dent before he's through. He's another big server. And Taylor Fritz is got a shot at against Stan Wawrinka. I think the odds are with Stan, but maybe if he wins that match, he carries on. I don't know how many of the young Americans are going to survive to the second week, frankly. And I think the one guy who could would be John Isner.
You know, it was funny because I did speak to Taylor Dent earlier in the week, and he came on KickServeRadio.com with us, and I asked him the same question, and I said, Taylor, if you look at the three guys that seem most likely to really make it furthest at Wimbledon, John Isner, Jack Sock, and Sam Querrey, which of those three would you suspect might be the guy to watch? And he said, you know what? I'm going to opt for another guy, Steve Johnson. And he really likes the way Stevie Johnson is going right now. And when you really think about it, that's a guy that has a tendency to sort of kind of fall off the radar a little bit. And I think undeservedly so.
Yeah, and he's just come off a very impressive title run this week. So that's going to help his confidence enormously, too. I don't know if he's... I mean, I'm impressed that he could win a title on grass. I don't know how far he can take it at Wimbledon. I think he's a little better on hard courts, frankly, but there's a possibility there. Now, Sam Querrey, unfortunately, although he's a seed, is stuck in a potential third round clash against Novak Djokovic, and I don't think he's going to come away from that one a victor. Now, Sock, you mentioned, is also, he's also seeded. He's seeded 27, but he potentially is going to play Milos Raonic. And I don't know whether that'll be a third rounder as well. And I think that he can push Milos, and there's a chance for an upset, but I think ultimately I've got to go with Raonic to win that match.
Steve, a year ago at this time, talk was about the possibility of Serena Williams doing what had not been done since Steffi Graf did it in 1988, which is win the calendar Grand Slam on the women's side. This year, the talk is of Novak Djokovic being able to do that. That is still intact for him, as we mentioned earlier. What do you think his chances are? This is a guy that has had the tendency to, at times when we would least expect it, be susceptible to letting his nerves get the better of him. As this thing moves forward and as we get through Wimbledon, throw Rio into the mix and then the U.S. Open, do you think that this guy's got the mettle? Do you think this guy's got the maturity now to be able to conquer some of his nervous demons and be able to pull off the potentially the Golden Slam?
Yeah, I'm not sure whether he can do the Golden Slam, but I do think he could win the Grand Slam. I've just had a sneaking suspicion if he was going to lose somewhere, it's the Olympics. Don't ask me why, but I do believe that he's going to be loose at Wimbledon. I really like his chances at Wimbledon because he's finally accomplished that career Grand Slam, and he's won Wimbledon the last 2 years. He's won it three times altogether. So he's very confident on the lawns there, and I think that he's going to feel as if he got a real monkey off his back in Paris. So I like his chances there, and then we'll see how he holds up under pressure at the Open. But Andy, what's so fascinating about him is that you've seen it within these matches. Last year, for instance, against Federer on the center court, having won the first set, he had 7 set points in the second set to go up 2 sets to love, and he didn't win the set. He lost it in the tiebreaker. So many opportunities eluding him, and then he was furious at the changeover, venting at his group and just screaming at himself. And he got it all off his chest and then came back calmly to win the last 2 sets. There were moments at the U.S. Open final against Federer where he looked very apprehensive. And we see it in a lot of cases, first set of the French Open final against Murray. But he has this ability, unlike just about any other top player I've ever seen, to go through these clear, nervous stretches and then regroup. Just put it behind him. Somehow vent, somehow get it out of his system, and then start playing again with a composure that's unstoppable.
The last match we saw this guy lose, Steve, in a Grand Slam match was at the French Open against Stan Wawrinka, and some people look at that as one of the best matches that's ever been played on clay with what Stan Wawrinka did that day. In your opinion, are you saying basically it's going to take a superhuman effort on the part of one of these other top-tier players to be able to prevent him from winning the slam? And if so, who would that most likely be?
Oh, boy, that's a great question. I mean, first to the former, yes, it will take a stupendous performance. And Wawrinka gave one that day at Roland Garros a year ago, coming from a set down, which, by the way, Djokovic, as we know, is the best front runner of the modern era. He has a better record than any player in the Open era, including Laver, Sampras, Borg, you name it. He's ahead of all of them once he's won the first set. And he did that against Stan last year, and Stan still came back and beat him in 4. Now, I do think Djokovic was hurting a little bit. He refused to talk about it, but he'd had an injury timeout during his Murray semifinal. So I really believe that there was something going on there, which he refused admirably to discuss. But yes, it will take somebody stepping up big time and blasting winners and just literally finding a way. But how often can that happen? We've seen it from Wawrinka a couple of times, but there are very few players that can blow Novak Djokovic off a court the way that Wawrinka did in Paris a year ago. So I still have a hard time seeing who's going to pull that off in best of five at either Wimbledon or the Open. Maybe we'll be surprised, but I'm not sure who that individual is. I mean, no one guy stands out. Dominic Thiem, as you know, people thought he might be a big threat in Paris, and Djokovic destroyed him in the semifinals. And Thiem is an emerging superstar, to be sure. So I'm not sure who this guy is that's going to find a way to beat him, but I tip my hat if it happens.
Thiem seems to be the latest in sort of the baby Fed, these guys that have really taken a lot of what they've seen from Roger Federer, but just don't seem to have that same level of firepower. You know, you look at obviously Grigor Dimitrov, and you look at, even David Goffin at some point has been sort of compared to him, and these guys, there's just one Fed in there.
Absolutely. No, I agree with that, but I would say that in Thiem's case, I think he's made immense progress, and it was a great effort to get to the semis there. And it just happened to be a vintage Djokovic performance that day. But he has the one-handed backhand. He's got enormous firepower on both sides and a kick serve in the ad court that is one of the best in the sport. I'm very encouraged about where he's headed. I don't think we're going to see a repeat of Dimitrov in Dominic Thiem. I think he's headed to the top of the sport. And I'm also very encouraged about Alexander Zverev. And, he, of course, both Thiem and Zverev beat Roger on the grass in the tune-up tournaments in Germany on the way to Wimbledon here. And both of them did it in tight three-set matches. I think those two guys, 2-3 years from now, could be vying for number one and two in the world.
And then finally, excuse my ignorance, Steve, but before I let you go, Rafael Nadal in this draw?
No, he's got the wrist injury. No, they announced he would not play.
Okay.
Uncle Tony says that they're expecting him, hoping he's back in Canada over the summer. If they're able to meet that deadline, I'm very impressed. But I'm worried about him, as I'm sure you are, Andy, because a wrist injury to his left wrist this time, not the right wrist, which kept him out of the U.S. Open in 2014. This one, to me, is much more worrisome because of the strain he puts on it every time he hits that extraordinary forehand of his, and I just don't know how well it's going to hold up over time. I certainly hope I'm wrong.
Certainly a once-in-a-generation player. The stories going into Wimbledon, Novak Djokovic, the calendar slam intact, the return of Roger Federer, the young up-and-coming players that we're going to look for that can make a run to potentially the round of 16 or better. I've been joined today by Steve Flink on kickserveradio.com, Tennis on Air with Andy Zoden. We're also being aired on Mile High Sports Radio in the Tennis Zone. Steve, always such a pleasure and a treat to be able to visit with you. Have a great trip over to Wimbledon, and I look forward to chatting again as we get into the hard court season.
Thank you, Andy. Enjoy being with you.
Anyone for tennis, wouldn't that be